When I asked Alice what I was to do now, what I was to do with the entirety of my mortal life, she shrugged and suggested a walk in the gardens. I almost laughed, but I kept my tongue still. I'd be foolish to push aside potential allies. I doubted she had Tamlin's ear, and I couldn't press her about it yet, but at least a walk provided a chance to glean some sense of my surroundings, and whether there was anyone else who might plead my case to Tamlin. The halls were silent and empty, strange for such a large estate. They'd mentioned others the night before, but I saw and heard no sign of them. A balmy breeze scented with hyacinth, I realized, if only from Elaine's small garden, floated down the halls, carrying with it the pleasant chirping of a bunting, a bird I wouldn't hear back home for months, if I ever heard them at all. I was almost to the grand staircase when I noticed the paintings. I hadn't let myself really look yesterday, but now, in the empty hall with no one to see me, a flash of color amid a shadowy, gloomy background made me stop, a riot of color and texture that compelled me to face the gilded frame. I'd never, never seen anything like it. "It's just a still life," a part of me said. And it was. A green glass vase with an assortment of flowers drooping over its narrow top, blossoms and leaves of every shape and size and color, roses, tulips, morning glory, goldenrod, maiden's lace, peonies. The skill it must have taken to make them look so lifelike, to make them more than lifelike. Just a vase of flowers against a dark background, but more than that. The flowers seemed to be vibrant with their own light, as if in defiance of the shadows gathered around them. The mastery needed to make the glass vase hold that light, to bend the light with the water within, as if the vase did indeed have weight to it atop its stone pedestal. Remarkable. I could have stared at it for hours. And the countless paintings along this hall alone could have occupied my entire day. But garden, plans. Still, as I moved on, I couldn't deny that this place was far more civilized than I'd thought. Peaceful, even, if I was willing to admit it. And if the High Fae were indeed gentler than human legend and rumor had led me to believe, then maybe convincing Alice of my misery might not be too hard. If I could win over Alice, convince her that the treaty had been wrong to demand such payment from me, she might indeed see if there was anything to get me out of this debt and...
"You," someone said, and I jumped back a step.
In the light of the open glass doors to the garden, a towering male figure stood silhouetted before me. Tamlin. He wore those warrior's clothes, cut close to show off his toned body, and three simple knives were now sheathed along his baldric, each long enough to look like it could gut me as easily as his beast's claws. His blonde hair had been tied back from his face, revealing those pointed ears and that strange, beautiful mask.
"Where are you going?" he said, gruffly enough that it almost sounded like a demand.
"You." I wondered if he even remembered my name. It took a moment to will enough strength into my legs to rise from my half-crouch. "Good morning," I said flatly. At least it was a better greeting than "you." "You said my time was to be spent however I wanted. I didn't realize I was under house arrest."
His jaw tightened. "Of course you're not under house arrest."
Even as he bit out the words, I couldn't ignore the sheer male beauty of that strong jaw, the richness of his golden tan skin. He was probably handsome, if he ever took off that mask. When he realized that I wasn't going to respond, he bared his teeth in what I supposed was an attempt at a smile and said,
"Do you want a tour?"
"No, thank you," I managed to get out, conscious of every awkward motion of my body as I edged around him. He stepped into my path, close enough that he conceded a step back.
"I've been sitting inside all morning. I need some fresh air."
"And you're insignificant enough that you wouldn't be a bother," he was probably thinking. "I'm fine," I said, casually dodging him. "You've been generous enough." I tried to sound like I meant it. A half smile. Not so pleasant, no doubt unused to being denied.
"Do you have some sort of problem with me?"
"No," I said quietly and walked through the doors. He let out a low snarl.
"I'm not going to kill you, Farah. I don't break my promises."
I almost stumbled down the garden steps as I glanced over my shoulder. He stood atop the stairs, as solid and ancient as the pale stones of the manor. "Kill, but not harm? Is that another loophole, one that Lucian might use against me, or anyone else here?"
"They're under orders not to even touch you."
"Yet I'm still trapped in your realm for breaking a rule I didn't know existed. Why was your friend even in the woods that day? I thought the treaty banned your kind from entering our lands." He just stared at me. Perhaps I'd gone too far, questioning him too much. Perhaps he could tell why I'd really asked.
"The treaty," he said quietly, "doesn't ban us from doing anything except for enslaving you. The wall is an inconvenience. If we cared to, we could shatter it and march through to kill you all."
I might be forced to live in Prithian forever, but my family, I dared ask. "And do you care to destroy the wall?" He looked me up and down, as if deciding whether I was worth the effort of explaining.
"I have no interest in the mortal lands, though I can't speak for my kind."
But he still hadn't answered my question. "Then what was your friend doing there?" Tamlin stilled. Such unearthly, primal grace, even to his breathing.
"There is a sickness in these lands, across Prithian. There has been for almost 50 years now. It is why this house and these lands are so empty. Most have left. The blight spreads slowly, but it has made magic act strangely. My own powers are diminished due to it. These masks,"
he tapped on his,
"are the result of a surge of it that occurred during a masquerade 49 years ago. Even now, we can't remove them."
Stuck in masks. For nearly 50 years. I would have gone mad, would have peeled my skin off my face. "You didn't have a mask as a beast? And neither did your friend."
"The blight is cruel like that."
"Either live as a beast or live with a mask. What sort of sickness is it?"
"It's not a disease, not a plague or illness. It's focused solely on magic, on those dwelling in Prithian. Andras was across the wall that day because I sent him to search for a cure."
"Can it hurt humans?" My stomach twisted. "Will it spread over the wall?"
"Yes," he said. "There is a chance of it affecting mortals and your territory. More than that, I don't know. It's slow moving, and your kind is safe for now. We haven't had any progression in decades. Magic seems to have stabilized, even though it's been weakened."
That he'd even admitted so much spoke volumes about how he imagined my future. I was never going home, never going to encounter another human to whom I might spill this secret vulnerability. A mercenary told me she believed fairies might be thinking of attacking. Is it related? A hint of a smile, perhaps a bit surprised.
I don't know. Do you talk to mercenaries often?
I talk to whoever bothers to tell me anything useful. He straightened, and it was only his promise not to kill me that kept me from cringing.
Then he rolled his shoulders, as if shaking off his annoyance. Was the tripwire you rigged in your room for me?
I sucked on my teeth. Can you blame me if it was?
I might take an animal form, but I am civilized, Feyre.
So he did remember my name, at least. But I looked pointedly at his hands, at the razor-sharp tips of those long, curved claws poking through his tanned skin.
Noticing my stare, he tucked his hands behind his back. He said sharply, "I'll see you at dinner."
It wasn't a request, but I still gave him a nod as I strode off between the hedges, not caring where I was going, only that he stayed far behind. A sickness in their lands, affecting their magic, draining it from them. A magical blight that might one day spread to the human world. After so many centuries without magic, we'd be defenseless against it, against whatever it could do to humans. I wondered if any of the High Fae would bother warning my kind. It didn't take me long to know the answer. Chapter 8. I pretended to meander through the exquisite and silent gardens, mentally marking the paths and clever places for hiding if I ever needed them. He'd taken my weapons, and I wasn't stupid enough to hope for an ash tree somewhere on the property with which to make my own. But his baldric had been laden with knives. There had to be an armory somewhere on the estate. And if not, I would find another weapon then, steal it if I had to, just in case. Upon inspection the night before, I'd learned that there was no lock on my window. Sneaking out and rappelling down the wisteria vines wouldn't be difficult at all. I'd climbed enough trees to not mind the height. Not that I planned to escape, but it was good to know, at least, how I might do should I ever be desperate enough to risk it. I didn't doubt Tamlin's claim that the rest of Prithian was deadly for a human, and if there was indeed some blight on these lands, I was better off here for the time being. But not without trying to find someone who might plead my case to Tamlin. Though Lucian, he could do with someone snapping at him if you've the courage for it, Alice had said to me yesterday. I chewed on my stubby nails as I walked, considering every possible plan and pitfall. I'd never been particularly good with words, had never learned the social warfare my sisters and mother had been so adept at, but I'd been decent enough when selling hides at the village market. So perhaps I'd seek out Tamlin's emissary, even if he detested me. He clearly had little interest in my living here. He'd suggested killing me. Perhaps he'd be eager to send me back, to persuade Tamlin to find some other way to fulfill the treaty, if there even was one. I approached a bench in an alcove blooming with foxglove when the sound of steps on shifting gravel filled the air. Two pairs of light, quick feet. I straightened, peering down the way I'd come, but the path was empty. I lingered at the edge of an open field of lanky meadow buttercups. The vibrant green and yellow field was deserted. Behind me arose a gnarled crabapple tree in full, glorious bloom, the petals of its flowers littering the shaded bench on which I'd been about to sit. A breeze set the branches rustling, a waterfall of white petals flittering down like snow. I scanned the garden, the field, carefully, carefully watching and listening for those two sets of feet. There was nothing in the tree, or behind it.
A prickling sensation ran down my spine. I'd spent enough time in the woods to trust my instincts. Someone stood behind me, perhaps two of them. A faint sniff and a quiet giggle issued from far too close. My heart leaped into my throat. I cast a subtle glance over my shoulder, but only a shining silvery light flickered in the corner of my vision. I had to turn around. I had to face it. The gravel crunched, nearer now. The shimmering in the corner of my eye grew larger, separating into two small figures no taller than my waist. My hands clenched into fists.
Farah!
Alice's voice cut across the garden. I jumped out of my skin as she called me again.
Farah, lunch! She hollered.
I whirled, a shout forming on my lips to alert her to whatever stood behind me, raising my fists, however futile it would be. But the shining things had vanished, along with their sniffing and giggling, and I found myself facing a weathered statue of two merry, bounding lambs. I rubbed my neck. Alice called me again, and I took a shuddering breath as I returned to the manor. But even as I strode through the hedges, carefully retracing my steps back to the house, I couldn't erase the creeping feeling that someone still watched me, curious and wanting to play. I stole a knife from dinner that night, just to have something, anything, to defend myself with. It turned out that dinner was the only meal I was invited to attend, which was fine. Three meals a day with Tamlin and Lucian would have been torturous. I could endure an hour of sitting at their fancy table if it made them think I was docile and had no plans to change my fate. While Lucian ranted to Tamlin about some malfunction of the magical carved eye that indeed allowed him to see, I slipped my knife down the sleeve of my tunic. My heart beat so fast I thought they could hear it, but Lucian continued speaking, and Tamlin's focus remained on his courtier. I supposed I should have pitied them for the masks they were forced to wear, for the blight that had infected their magic and people. But the less I interacted with them, the better, especially when Lucian seemed to find everything I said to be hilariously human and uneducated. Snapping at him wouldn't help my plans. It would be an uphill battle to win his favor, if only for the fact that I was alive and his friend was not. I'd have to deal with him alone, or risk raising Tamlin's suspicions too soon. Lucian's red hair shone in the firelight, the colors flickering with every movement he made, and the jewels in the hilt of his sword glinted. The ornate blade, so unlike the baldric of knives, still strapped across Tamlin's chest. But there was no one here to use a sword against. And while the sword was embedded with jewels and filigree, it was large enough to be more than decoration. Perhaps it had something to do with those invisible things in the garden. Maybe he'd lost his eye and earned that scar in battle. I thought against a shudder. Alice had said the house was safe, but warned me to keep my wits about me. What might lurk beyond the house, or be able to use my human senses against me? Just how far would Tamlin's order not to harm me stretch? What kind of authority did he hold? Lucian paused, and I found him smirking at me, making the scar even more brutal.
Were you admiring my sword? Or just contemplating killing me, Farah?
Of course not, I said softly and glanced at Tamlin. The gold flecks in his eyes glowed, even from the other end of the table. My heart beat at a gallop. Had he somehow heard me take the knife? The whisper of metal on wood? I forced myself to look again at Lucian. His lazy, vicious grin was still there. Act civilized, behave, possibly win him to my side. I could do that.
Tamlin broke the silence.
Feyre likes to hunt.
I don't like to hunt.
I should have probably used a more polite tone, but I went on.
I hunt out of necessity. And how did you know that?
Tamlin's stare was bald, assessing. Why else were you in the woods that day? You had a bow and arrow in your house.
I wondered whether he'd almost said hovel.
When I saw your father's hands, I knew he wasn't the one using them.
He gestured to my scarred, calloused hands.
You told him about the rations and money from pelts. Fairies might be many things, but we're not stupid. Unless your ridiculous legends claim that about us, too.
Ridiculous. Insignificant. I stared at the crumbs of bread and swirls of remaining sauce on my golden plate. Had I been at home, I would have licked my plate clean, desperate for any extra bit of nourishment. And the plates? I could have bought a team of horses, a plow, and a field for just one of them. Disgusting. Lucian cleared his throat.
How old are you, anyway?
19. Pleasant, civilized. Lucian tisked.
So young and so grave, and a skilled killer already.
I tightened my hands into fists, the metal of my knife now warm against my skin. Docile, unthreatening, tame. I'd made my mother a promise, and I'd keep it. Tamlin's looking after my family wasn't the same as my looking after them. That wild small dream could still come to pass. My sisters comfortably married off, and a lifetime with my father, with enough food for us both, and enough time to maybe paint a little, or to maybe learn what I wanted. It could still happen, in a faraway land, perhaps, if I ever got out of this bargain. I could still cling to that scrap of a dream, though these high fae would likely laugh at how typically human it was to think so small, to want so little. Yet any bit of information might help, and if I showed interest in them, perhaps they would warm to me. What was this but another trap in the woods? So I said, "So is this what you do with your lives? Spare humans from the treaty and have fine meals?" I gave a pointed glance toward Tamlin's baldric, the warrior's clothes, Lucian's sword. Lucian smirked.
"We also dance with the spirits under the full moon and snatch human babes from their cradles to replace them with changelings."
"Didn't?"
Tamlin interrupted, his deep voice surprisingly gentle.
"Didn't your mother tell you anything about us?"
I prodded the table with my forefinger, digging my short nails into the wood. "My mother didn't have the time to tell me stories." I could reveal that part of my past, at least. Lucian, for once, didn't laugh. After a rather stilted pause, Tamlin asked,
"How did she die?"
When I lifted my brows, he added a bit more softly,
"I didn't see signs of an older woman in your house."
Predator or not, I didn't need his pity. But I said, "Typhus, when I was 8. I rose from my seat to leave.
"Feyre,"
Tamlin said, and I half turned, a muscle feathered in his cheek. Lucian glanced between us, that metal eye roving, but kept silent. Then Tamlin shook his head, the movement more animal than anything, and murmured,
"I'm sorry for your loss."
I tried to keep from grimacing as I turned on my heel and left. I didn't want or need his condolences. Not for my mother. Not when I hadn't missed her in years. Let Tamlin dismiss me as a rude, uncouth human not worth his careful watch. I'd be better off persuading Lucian to speak to Tamlin on my behalf. And soon, before any of the others whom they'd mention appeared, or this blight of theirs grew. Tomorrow. I'd speak to Lucian then, test him out a bit. In my room, I found a small satchel in the armoire and filled it with a spare set of clothes, along with my stolen knife. It was a pitiful blade, but a piece of cutlery was better than nothing. Just in case I was ever allowed to go, and had to leave at a moment's notice. Just in case. Chapter 9. The following morning, as Alice and the other servant woman prepared my bath, I contemplated my plan. Tamlin had mentioned that he and Lucian had various duties, and aside from running into him in the house yesterday, I'd seen neither of them around. So, locating Lucian alone would be the first order of business. A casual question tossed in Alice's direction had her revealing that she believed Lucian was on border patrol today and would be at the stables, preparing to leave. I was halfway through the gardens, hurrying toward the outcropping of buildings I'd spied the day before, when Tamlin said from behind me,
"No tripwires today?"
I froze mid-step and looked over my shoulder. He was standing a few feet away. How had he crept up so silently on the gravel? Fairy stealth, no doubt. I willed calm into my veins, my head. I said as politely as I could, "You said I was safe here, so I listened." His eyes narrowed slightly, but he put on what I supposed was his attempt at a pleasant smile.
"My morning work was postponed," he said.
Indeed. His usual tunic was off, the baldric gone, and the sleeves of his white shirt had been rolled up to the elbows to reveal tanned forearms corded with muscle.
"If you want to ride across the grounds, if you're interested in your new residence, I can take you."
Again, that effort to be accommodating, even when every word seemed to pain him. Maybe he could eventually be swayed by Lucian. And until then, how much could I get away with if he was going to such lengths to make his people swear not to harm me, to shield me from the treaty? I smiled blandly and said, "I'd prefer to spend today alone, I think, but thank you for the offer." He tensed.
"What about—"
"No, thank you," I interrupted, marveling a bit at my own audacity. But I had to catch Lucian alone, had to feel him out. He might already be gone. Tamlin clenched his hands into fists, as if fighting against the claws itching to burst out. But he didn't reprimand me, didn't do anything other than prowl back into the house without another word. Soon enough, if I was lucky, Tamlin wouldn't be my problem anymore. I hurried for the stables, tucking away the information. Maybe one day, if I was ever released, if there was an ocean and years between us, I would think back and wonder why he'd bothered. I tried not to look too eager, too out of breath when I finally reached the pretty painted stables. It didn't surprise me that the stable boys all wore horse masks. For them, I felt a shred of pity at what the blight had done. The ridiculous masks they now had to wear until someone could figure out how to undo the magic binding them to their faces. But none of the stable hands even looked at me, either because I wasn't worth it or because they, too, resented me for the death of Andras. I didn't blame them. Any attempt at casualness took a stumble when I finally found Lucian astride a black gelding, grinning down at me with two white teeth.
"Morning, Farah."
I tried to hide the stiffening in my shoulders, tried to smile a bit.
"Going for a ride, or merely reconsidering Tam's offer to live with us?"
I tried to recall the words I'd come up with earlier, the words to win him. But he laughed, and not pleasantly.
Come now. I'm to patrol the southern woods today, and I'm curious about the abilities you used to bring down my friend, whether accidental or not. It's been a while since I encountered a human, let alone a fey killer. Indulge me in a hunt.
Perfect. At least that part of this had gone well, even if it sounded as lovely as facing a bear in its den. So I stepped aside to let a stable boy pass. He moved with a fluid smoothness, like all of them here, and didn't look at me either. No indication at all of what he thought of having a fey killer in his stable. But my kind of hunting couldn't be done on horseback. Mine consisted of careful stalking and well-laid traps and snares. I didn't know how to give chase atop a horse. Lucian accepted a quiver of arrows from the returning stable boy with a nod of thanks. Lucian smiled in a way that didn't meet that metal eye, or the russet one.
No ash arrows today, unfortunately.
I clenched my jaw to keep a retort from slipping off my tongue. If he was forbidden from hurting me, I couldn't fathom why he would invite me along, save to mock me in whatever way he could. Perhaps he was truly that bored. Better for me. So I shrugged, looking as bored as I could. Well, I suppose I'm already dressed for a hunt.
Perfect, Lucian said, his metal eye gleaming in the sunlight slanting in through the open stable doors.
I prayed Tamlin wouldn't come prowling through them. Prayed he wouldn't decide to go for a ride on his own and catch us here.
Let's go then, I said, and Lucian motioned for them to prepare a horse. I leaned against a wooden wall as I waited, keeping an eye on the doorway for signs of Tamlin, and offered my own bland replies to Lucian's remarks about the weather. Mercifully, I was soon astride a white mare, riding with Lucian through the spring-shrouded woods beyond the gardens. I kept a healthy distance from the fox-masked fairy on the broad path, hoping that eye of his couldn't see through the back of his head. The thought didn't sit well, and I shoved it away, along with the part of me that marveled at the way the sun illuminated the leaves and the clusters of crocuses that grew like flashes of vibrant purple against the brown and green. Those were things that weren't necessary to my plans, useless details that only blocked out everything else. The shape and slope of the path, what trees were good for climbing, sounds of nearby water sources, those things could help me survive if I ever needed to. But, like the rest of the grounds, the forest was utterly empty. No sign of fairies, nor any high fae wandering around. Just as well.
Well, you certainly have the quiet part of hunting down, Lucian said, falling back to ride beside me.
Good. Let him come to me, rather than me seeming too eager, too friendly.
I adjusted the weight of the quiver strap across my chest, then ran a finger along the smooth curve of the U-bow in my lap. The bow was larger than the one I used at home, the arrows heavier and heads thicker.
I would probably miss whatever target I found until I adjusted to the weight and balance of the bow. 5 years ago, I'd taken the very last of my father's coppers from our former fortune to purchase my bow and arrows. I'd since allotted a small sum every month for arrows and replacement strings.
Well? Lucian pressed. No game good enough for you to slaughter? We've passed plenty of squirrels and birds.
The canopy above cast shadows upon his fox mask, light and dark and gleaming metal.
You seem to have enough food on your table that I don't need to add to it, especially when there's always plenty left over.
I doubted squirrel would be good enough for their table.
Lucian snorted, but didn't say anything else as we passed beneath a flowering lilac, its purple cones drooping low enough to graze my cheek like cool, velvety fingers. The sweet, crisp scent lingered in my nose even as we rode on.
Not useful, I told myself. Although, the thick brush behind it would be a good hiding spot if I needed one.
You said you were an emissary for Tamlin, I ventured. Do emissaries usually patrol the grounds?
A casual, disinterested question.
Lucian clicked his tongue.
I'm Tamlin's emissary for formal uses, but this was Andrus's shift. So someone needed to fill in. It's an honor to do it.
I swallowed hard. Andrus had a place here, and friends here. He hadn't been just some nameless, faceless fairy. No doubt he was more missed than I was. I'm sorry, I said, and meant it. I didn't know what he meant to you all. Lucian shrugged.
Tamlin said as much, which was no doubt why he brought you here. Or maybe you looked so pathetic in those rags that he took pity on you.
I wouldn't have joined you if I'd known you would use this ride as an excuse to insult me. Alice had mentioned that Lucian could use someone who snapped back at him. Easy enough. Lucian smirked.
Apologies, Feyre.
I might have called him a liar for that apology had I not known he couldn't lie, which made the apology sincere. I couldn't sort it out.
So, he said, when are you going to start trying to persuade me to beseech Tamlin to find a way to free you from the treaty's rules?
I tried not to jolt. What?
That's why you agreed to come out here, isn't it? Why you wound up at the stables exactly as I was leaving?
He shot me a sideways glance with that russet eye of his.
Honestly, I'm impressed. And flattered you think I have that kind of sway with Tamlin.
I wouldn't reveal my hand. Not yet.
What are you talking?
His cocked head was answer enough. He chuckled and said,
Before you waste one of your precious few human breaths, let me explain two things to you. One, if I had my way, you'd be gone, so it wouldn't take much convincing on your part. Two, I can't have my way, because there is no alternative to what the treaty demands. There is no extra loophole.
But there has to be something.
I admire your balls, Feyre, I really do. Or maybe it's stupidity. But since Tam won't gut you, which was my first choice, you're stuck here. Unless you want to rough it on your own in Prithian, which, he looked me up and down, I'd advise against.
No, I couldn't just stay here forever until I died. Maybe there was some other way, or someone else who could find a way out. I mastered my uneven breathing, shoving away the panicked, bleeding thoughts.
A valiant effort, Lucian said with a smirk. I didn't bother hiding the glare I cut in his direction. We rode on in silence, and aside from a few birds and squirrels, I saw nothing, heard nothing. Unusual. After a few minutes, I'd quieted my riotous thoughts enough to say, Where is the rest of Tamlin's court? They all fled this blight on magic?
How'd you know about the court?
He asked so quickly that I realized he thought I meant something else. I kept my face blank. Do normal estates have emissaries? And servants chatter? Isn't that why you made them wear the bird masks to that party? Lucian scowled, that scar stretching.
We each chose what to wear that night to honor Tamlin's shape-shifting gifts, the servants too. But now, if we had the choice, we'd peel them off with our bare hands, he said, tugging on his own. It didn't move.
What happened to the magic to make it act that way? Lucian let out a harsh laugh.
Something was sent from the shitholes of hell, he said. then glanced around and swore. I shouldn't have said that. If word got back to her.
Who?
The color had leached from his sun-kissed skin. He dragged a hand through his hair.
Never mind. The less you know, the better. Tam might not find it troublesome to tell you about the blight, but I wouldn't put it past a human to sell the information to the highest bidder.
I bristled, but the few bits of information he'd released lay before me like glittering jewels. A her who scared Lucian enough to make him worry, to make him afraid someone might be listening, spying, monitoring his behavior, even out here. I studied the shadows between the trees, but found nothing. Prithian was ruled by 7 High Lords. Perhaps this she was whoever governed this territory. If not a High Lord, then a High Lady, if that was even possible.
How old are you? I asked, hoping he'd keep divulging some more useful information. It was better than knowing nothing.
Old, he said.
He scanned the brush, but I had a feeling his darting eyes weren't looking for game. His shoulders were too tense.
What sort of powers do you have? Can you shapeshift like Tamlin? He sighed, looking skyward before he studied me warily, that metal eye narrowing with unnerving focus.
Trying to figure out my weaknesses so you can...
I glowered at him.
Fine. No, I can't shapeshift. Only Tam can.
But your friend, he appeared as a wolf. Unless that was his...
No, no. Andrus was High Fae too. Tam can shift us into other shapes if need be. He saves it for his sentries only, though. When Andrus went across the wall, Tam changed him into a wolf so he wouldn't be spotted as a fairy, though his size was probably indication enough.
A shudder went down my spine, violent enough that I didn't acknowledge the red-hot glare Lucian lobbed my way. I didn't have the nerve to ask if Tamlin could change me into another shape.
Anyway, Lucian went on, the High Fae don't have specific powers the way the lesser fairies do. I don't have a natural-born affinity, if that's what you're asking. I don't clean everything in sight, or lure mortals to a watery death, or grant you answers to whatever questions you might have if you trap me. We just exist. To rule.
I turned in the other direction so he couldn't see as I rolled my eyes. I suppose if I were one of you, I'd be one of the fairies, not High Fae. A lesser fairy like Alice, waiting on you hand and foot? He didn't reply, which amounted to a yes. With that arrogance, no wonder Lucian found my presence as a replacement for his friend to be abhorrent. And since he would probably loathe me forever, since he'd ended my scheming before it had even begun, I asked, "How'd you get that scar?"
I didn't keep my mouth shut when I should have and was punished for it.
Tamlin did that to you?
Cauldron, no. He wasn't there, but he got me the replacement afterward.
More answers that weren't answers. So there are fairies who will actually answer any question if you trap them? Maybe they'd know how to free me from the treaty's terms.
Yes, he said tightly. The Suriel. But they're old and wicked, and not worth the danger of going out to find them. And if you're stupid enough to keep looking so intrigued, I'm going to become rather suspicious and tell Tam to put you under house arrest. Though I suppose you would deserve it if you were indeed stupid enough to seek one out.
They had to lurk nearby then if he was this concerned. Lucian whipped his head to the right, listening, his eye whirring softly. The hair on my neck stood, and I had my bow drawn in a heartbeat, pointing in the direction Lucian stared.
Put your bow down, he whispered, his voice low and rough. Put your damned bow down, human, and look straight ahead.
I did as he said, the hair on my arms rising as something rustled in the brush.
Don't react,
Lucian said, forcing his gaze ahead too, the metal eye going still and silent.
No matter what you feel or see, don't react. Don't look. Just stare ahead.
I started trembling, gripping the reins in my sweaty hands. I might have wondered if this was some kind of horrible joke, but Lucian's face had gone so very, very pale. Our horses' ears flattened against their heads, but they continued walking, as if they'd also understood Lucian's command.
And then I felt it.
Chapter 10. My blood froze as a creeping, leeching cold lurched by. I couldn't see anything, just a vague shimmering in the corner of my vision, but my horse stiffened beneath me. I willed my face into blankness. Even the balmy spring woods seemed to recoil, to wither and freeze. The cold thing whispered past, circling. I could see nothing, but I could feel it. And in the back of my mind, an ancient, hollow voice whispered,
I will grind your bones between my claws. I will drink your marrow. I will feast on your flesh. I am what you fear. I am what you dread. Look at me. Look at me.
I tried to swallow, but my throat had closed up. I kept my eyes on the trees, on the canopy, on anything but the cold mass circling us again and again.
Look at me!
I wanted to look. I needed to see what it was.
Look at me!
I stared at the coarse trunk of a distant elm, thinking of pleasant things, like hot bread and full bellies.
I will fill my belly with you. I will devour you. Look at me.
A starry, unclouded night sky, peaceful and glittering and endless. Summer sunrise. A refreshing bath in a forest pool. Meetings with Isaac. Losing myself for an hour or two in his body, in our shared breaths. It was all around us, so cold that my teeth chattered.
Look at me.
I stared and stared at that ever-nearing tree trunk, not daring to blink. My eyes strained, filling with tears, and I let them fall, refusing to acknowledge the thing that lurked around us.
Look at me.
And just as I thought I would give in, when my eyes hurt so much from not looking, the cold disappeared into the brush, leaving a trail of still recoiling plants behind it. Only after Lucian exhaled and our horses shook their heads did I dare sag in my seat. Even the crocuses seemed to straighten again. What was that? I asked, brushing the tears from my face. Lucian's face was still pale.
You don't want to know.
Please. Was it that Suriel you mentioned? Lucian's russet eye was dark as he answered hoarsely.
No. It was a creature that should not be in these lands. We call it the Bog. You cannot hunt it and you cannot kill it, even with your beloved ash arrows.
Why can't I look at it?
Because when you look at it, when you acknowledge it, that's when it becomes real. That's when it can kill you.
A shiver spider walked down my spine. This was the Prithian I'd expected. The creatures that made humans speak of them in hushed tones even now. The reason I hadn't hesitated, not for a heartbeat when I'd considered the possibility of that wolf being a fairy. I heard its voice in my head. It told me to look. Lucian rolled his shoulders.
Well, thank the cauldron that you didn't. Cleaning up that mess would have ruined the rest of my day.
He gave me a wan smile. I didn't return it.
I still heard the bog's voice whispering between the leaves, calling to me.
After an hour of meandering through the trees, hardly speaking to each other, I'd stopped trembling enough to turn to him. So, you're old, I said, and you carry around a sword and go on border patrol. Did you fight in the war? Fine. Perhaps I hadn't quite let go of my curiosity about his eye. He winced.
Shit, Feyre, I'm not that old.
Are you a warrior, though?
Would you be able to kill me if it ever came to that?
Lucien huffed a laugh.
Not as good as Tam, but I know how to handle my weapons.
He patted the hilt of his sword.
Would you like me to teach you how to wield a blade? Or do you already know how, oh mighty mortal huntress? If you took down Andrus, you probably don't need to learn anything. Only where to aim, right?
He tapped on his chest. I don't know how to use a sword. I only know how to hunt.
Same thing, isn't it?
For me, it's different. Lucien fell silent, considering.
I suppose you humans are such hateful cowards that you would have wet yourself, curled up and waited to die if you'd known beyond a doubt what Andrus truly was.
Insufferable. Lucien sighed as he looked me over.
Do you ever stop being so serious and dull?
Do you ever stop being such a prick? I snapped back.
Dead. Really, truly, I should have been dead for that.
But Lucien grinned at me.
Much better.
Alice, it seemed, had not been wrong. Whatever tentative truce we built that afternoon vanished at the dinner table. Tamlin was lounging in his usual seat, a long claw out and circling his goblet. It paused on the lip as soon as I entered, Lucien on my heels. His green eyes pinned me to the spot. Right. I'd brushed him off that morning, claiming I wanted to be alone. Tamlin slowly looked at Lucien, whose face had turned grave.
We went on a hunt, Lucien said.
I heard, Tamlin said roughly, glancing between us as we took our seats. And did you have fun?
Slowly, his claw sank back into his flesh. Lucien didn't answer, leaving it to me.
Coward. I cleared my throat.
Sort of, I said.
Did you catch anything?
Every word was clipped out.
No.
Lucien gave me a pointed cough, as if urging me to say more, but I had nothing to say. Tamlin stared at me for a long moment, then dug into his food, not all that interested in talking to me either. Then Lucien quietly said,
Tam.
Tamlin looked up. More animal than Fay in those green eyes, a demand for whatever it was Lucien had to say. Lucian's throat bobbed.
The bog was in the forest today.
The fork in Tamlin's hand folded in on itself. He said with lethal calm,
You ran into it?
Lucien nodded.
It moved past, but came close. It must have snuck through the border.
Metal groaned as Tamlin's claws punched out, obliterating the fork. He rose to his feet with a powerful, brutal movement. I tried not to tremble at the contained fury, at how his canines seemed to lengthen as he said,
Where in the forest?
Lucien told him. Tamlin threw a glance in my direction before stalking out of the room and shutting the door behind him with unnerving gentleness. Lucien loosed a breath, pushing away his half-eaten food and rubbing at his temples. Where is he going? I asked, staring toward the door.
to hunt the bog.
You said it couldn't be killed, that you can't face it.
Tam can.
My breath caught a bit. The gruff, high fey, half-heartedly flattering me, was capable of killing a thing like the bog. And yet, he'd served me himself that first night. Offered me life rather than death. I'd known he was lethal, that he was a warrior of sorts, but... So he went to hunt the bog where we were earlier today? Lucian shrugged.
If he's going to pick up a trail, it would be there.
I had no idea how anyone could face that immortal horror, but it wasn't my problem. And just because Lucian wasn't going to eat anymore didn't mean I wouldn't. Lucian, lost in thought, didn't even notice the feast I downed. I returned to my room, and, awake, with nothing else to do, began monitoring the garden beyond for any signs of Tamlin's return. He didn't come back. I sharpened the knife I'd hidden away on a bit of stone I'd taken from the garden. An hour passed, and still Tamlin didn't return. The moon showed her face, casting the garden below in silver and shadow. Ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous to watch for his return, to see if he could indeed survive against the bog. I turned from the window, about to drag myself into bed. But something moved out in the garden. I lunged for the curtains beside the window, not wanting to be caught waiting for him, and peered out. Not Tamlin, but someone lurked by the hedges facing the house, looking toward me. Male, hunched, and... The breath went out of me as the fairy hobbled closer, just 2 steps into the light leaking from the house. Not a fairy, but a man. My father.
Chapter 11. I didn't give myself a chance to panic, to doubt, to do anything but wish I had stolen some food from my breakfast table as I layered on tunic after tunic and bundled myself in a cloak, stuffing the knife I'd stolen into my boot. The extra clothes in the satchel would just be a burden to carry. My father. My father had come to take me, to save me. Whatever benefits Tamlin had given him upon my departure couldn't be too tempting then. Maybe he had a ship prepared to take us far, far away. Maybe he had somehow sold the cottage and gotten enough money to set us up in a new place, a new continent. My father, my crippled, broken father, had come. A quick survey of the ground beneath my window revealed no one outside, and the silent house told me no one had spotted my father yet. He was still waiting by the hedge, now beckoning to me. At least Tamlin had not returned. With a final glance at my room, listening for anyone approaching from the hall, I grasped the nearby trellis of wisteria and eased down the building. I winced at the crunch of gravel beneath my boots, but my father was already moving toward the outer gates, limping along with his cane. How had he even gotten here? There had to be horses nearby then. He was hardly wearing enough clothing for the winter that would await us once we crossed the wall. But I'd layered on so much that I could spare him some items if need be. Keeping my movements light and silent, carefully avoiding the light of the moon, I hurried after my father. He moved with surprising swiftness toward the darkened hedges and the gate beyond. Only a few hall candles were burning inside the house. I didn't dare breathe too loudly. Didn't dare call for my father as he limped toward the gate. If we left now, if he indeed had horses, we could be halfway home by the time they realized I was gone. Then we'd flee. Flee Tamlin, flee the blight that could soon invade our lands. My father reached the gates. They were already open, the dark forest beyond beckoning. He must have hidden the horses deeper in. He turned toward me, that familiar face drawn and tight, those brown eyes clear for once, and beckoned. "Hurry, hurry," every movement of his hand seemed to shout. My heart was a raging beat in my chest, in my throat. Only a few feet now, to him, to freedom, to a new life. A massive hand wrapped around my arm.
"Going somewhere?"
Shit, shit, shit. Tamlin's claws poked through my layers of clothing as I looked up at him in unabashed terror. I didn't dare move, not as his lips thinned and the muscles in his jaw quivered, not as he opened his mouth and I glimpsed fangs, long, throat-tearing fangs shining in the moonlight. He was going to kill me right there, and then kill my father. No more loopholes, no more flattery, no more mercy. He didn't care anymore. I was as good as dead.
"Please," I breathed. "My father..."
"Your father?"
He lifted his stare to the gates behind me, and his growl rumbled through me as he bared his teeth.
"Why don't you look again?"
He released me. I staggered back a step, whirling, sucking in a breath to tell my father to run, but he wasn't there. Only a pale bow and a quiver of pale arrows remained, propped up against the trees. Mountain ash. They hadn't been there moments before. They rippled, as if they were nothing but water. And then the bow and quiver became a large pack, laden with supplies. Another ripple, and there were my sisters, huddled together, weeping. My knees buckled.
"What is?"
I didn't finish the question. My father now stood there, still hunched and beckoning. A flawless rendering.
"Weren't you warned to keep your wits about you?" Tamlin snapped. "That your human senses would betray you?"
He stepped beyond me and let out a snarl so vicious that whatever the thing was by the gates shimmered with light and darted out as fast as lightning streaking through the dark.
"Fool," he said to me, turning. "If you're ever going to run away, at least do it in the daytime."
He stared me down, and the fangs slowly retracted. The claws remained.
"There are worse things than the bog prowling these woods at night. That thing at the gates isn't one of them, and it still would have taken a good long while devouring you."
Somehow my mouth began working again, and of all the things to say, I blurted, "Can you blame me? My crippled father appears beneath my window and you think I'm not going to run for him? Do you actually think I'd gladly stay here forever, even if you'd taken care of my family, all for some treaty that had nothing to do with me and allows your kind to slaughter humans as you see fit?" He flexed his fingers as if trying to get the claws back in, but they remained out, ready to slice through flesh and bone.
"What do you want, Farah?"
"I want to go home."
"Home to what, exactly? You'd prefer that miserable human existence to this?"
"I made a promise," I said, my breathing ragged, "to my mother when she died, that I'd look after my family, that I'd take care of them. All I have done every single day, every hour, has been for that vow. And just because I was hunting to save my family, to put food in their bellies, I'm now forced to break it."
He stalked toward the house, and I gave him a wide berth before falling into step behind him. His claws slowly, slowly retracted. He didn't look at me as he said,
"You are not breaking your vow. You are fulfilling it and then some by staying here. Your family is better cared for now than they were when you were there."
Those chipped, miscolored paintings inside the cottage flashed in my vision. Perhaps they would forget who had even painted them in the first place. Insignificant. That's what all those years I'd given them would be, as insignificant as I was to these high fae. And that dream I'd had of one day living with my father with enough food and money and paint, it had been my dream, no one else's. I rubbed at my chest.
I can't just give up on it, on them, no matter what you say.
Even if I had been a fool, a stupid human fool, to believe my father would ever actually come for me. Tamlin eyed me sidelong.
You're not giving up on them.
Living in luxury? Stuffing myself with food? How is that not—
They are cared for. They are fed and comfortable.
Fed and comfortable. If he couldn't lie, if it was true then it was beyond anything I'd ever dared hope for. Then, my vow to my mother was fulfilled. It stunned me enough that I didn't say anything for a moment as we walked. My life was now owned by the treaty, but perhaps I'd been freed in another sort of way.
We neared the sweeping stairs that led into the manor, and I finally asked,
Lucian goes on border patrol, and you've mentioned other sentries, yet I've never seen one here. Where are they all?
At the border, he said, as if that were a suitable answer.
Then he added,
We don't need sentries if I'm here.
Because he was deadly enough, I tried not to think about it, but still I asked,
Were you trained as a warrior then?
Yes.
When I didn't reply, he added,
I spent most of my life in my father's warband on the borders, training as a warrior to one day serve him, or others. Running these lands was not supposed to fall to me.
The flatness with which he said it told me enough about how he felt about his current title, about why the presence of his silver-tongued friend was necessary. But it was too personal, too demanding to ask what had occurred to change his circumstances so greatly. So I cleared my throat and said,
What manner of fairies prowl the woods beyond this gate, if the bog isn't the worst of them? What was that thing?
What I'd meant to ask was, what would have tormented and then eaten me? Who are you to be so powerful that they pose no threat to you? He paused on the bottom step, waiting for me to catch up.
A puka. They use your own desires to lure you to some remote place. Then they eat you. Slowly. It probably smelled your human scent in the woods and followed it to the house.
I shivered and didn't bother to hide it. Tamlin went on.
These lands used to be well guarded. The deadlier fairies were contained within the borders of their native territories, monitored by the local fey lords or driven into hiding. Creatures like the puka never would have dared set foot here. But now, the sickness that infected Prithian has weakened the wards that kept them out.
A long pause, like the words were choked out of him.
Things are different now. It's not safe to travel alone at night, especially if you're human.
Because humans were defenseless as babes compared to natural-born predators like Lucian and Tamlin, who didn't need weapons to hunt. I glanced at his hands but found no trace of the claws, only tanned, calloused skin. What else is different now? I asked, trailing him up the marble front steps. He didn't stop this time, didn't even look over his shoulder to see me, as he said.
Everything.
so I truly was to live there forever. As much as I longed to ensure that Tamlin's word about caring for my family was true, as much as his claim that I was taking better care of my family by staying away, even if I was truly fulfilling that vow to my mother by staying in Prithian, without the weight of that promise, I was left hollow and empty. Over the next 3 days, I found myself joining Lucian on Andrus's old patrol while Tamlin hunted the grounds for the bog, unseen by us. Despite being an occasional bastard, Lucian didn't seem to mind my company, and he did most of the talking, which was fine. It left me to brood over the consequences of firing a single arrow. An arrow. I never fired a single one during those 3 days we rode along the border. That very morning, I'd spied a red doe in a glen and aimed out of instinct, my arrow poised to fly right into her eye as Lucian sneered that she was not a fairy, at least. But I'd stared at her, fat and healthy and content, and then slackened the bow, replaced the arrow in my quiver, and let the doe wander on. I never saw Tamlin around the manor, off hunting the bog day and night, Lucian informed me. Even at dinner, he spoke little before leaving early, off to continue his hunt night after night. I didn't mind his absence. It was a relief, if anything. On the third night after my encounter with the Pooka, I'd scarcely sat down before Tamlin got up, giving an excuse about not wanting to waste hunting time. Lucian and I stared after him for a moment. What I could see of Lucian's face was pale and tight. "You worry about him," I said. Lucian slumped in his seat, wholly undignified for a fey lord.
"Tamlin gets into moods."
"He doesn't want your help hunting the bog?"
"He prefers being alone, and having the bog on our lands, I don't suppose you'd understand. The Pooka are minor enough not to bother him, but even after he's shredded the bog, he'll brood over it."
"And there's no one who can help him at all?"
"He would probably shred them for disobeying his order to stay away."
A brush of ice slithered across my nape. "He would be that brutal?" Lucian studied the wine in his goblet.
"You don't hold on to power by being everyone's friend. And among the fairies, lesser and high fae alike, a firm hand is needed. We're too powerful and too bored with immortality to be checked by anything else."
It seemed like a cold, lonely position to have, especially when you didn't particularly want it. I wasn't sure why it bothered me so much. The snow was falling, thick and merciless, already up to my knees as I pulled the bowstring back, farther and farther, until my arm trembled. Behind me, a shadow lurked. No, watched. I didn't dare turn to look at it, to see who might be within that shadow, observing, not as the wolf stared at me across the clearing. Just staring, as if waiting, as if daring me to fire the ash arrow. No. No, I didn't want to do it. Not this time, not again. Not... But I had no control over my fingers, absolutely none, and he was still staring as I fired. One shot. One shot straight through that golden eye. A plume of blood splattering the snow, a thud of a heavy body, a sigh of wind. No! It wasn't a wolf that hit the snow. No, it was a man, tall and well-formed. No, not a man, a high fae with those pointed ears. I blinked, and then my hands were warm and sticky with blood. Then his body was red and skinless, steaming in the cold, and it was his skin that I held in my hands, and...
I threw myself awake, sweat slipping down my back, and forced myself to breathe, to open my eyes and note each detail of the night-dark bedroom.
Real. This was real. But I could still see that high fey male face down in the snow, my arrow through his eye, red and bloody all over from where I'd cut and peeled off his skin. Bile stung my throat. Not real. Just a dream. Even if what I'd done to Andras, even as a wolf, was. I scrubbed at my face. Perhaps it was the quiet, the hollowness of the past few days. Perhaps it was only that I no longer had to think hour to hour about how to keep my family alive, but it was regret and maybe shame that coated my tongue, my bones. I shuddered as if I could fling it off and kicked back the sheets to rise from the bed. Chapter 12. I couldn't entirely shake the horror, the gore of my dream as I walked down the dark halls of the manor, the servants and Lucian long since asleep. But I had to do something, anything after that nightmare, if only to avoid sleeping. A bit of paper in one hand and a pen gripped in the other, I carefully traced my steps, noting the windows and doors and exits, occasionally jotting down vague sketches and X's on the parchment. It was the best I could do, and to any literate human, my markings would have made no sense. But I couldn't write or read more than my basic letters, and my makeshift map was better than nothing. If I were to remain here, it was essential to know the best hiding places, the easiest way out, should things ever go badly for me. I couldn't entirely let go of the instinct. It was too dim to admire any of the paintings lining the walls, and I didn't dare risk a candle. These past 3 days, there had been servants in the halls when I'd worked up the nerve to look at the art, and the part of me that spoke with Nesta's voice had laughed at the idea of an ignorant human trying to admire fairy art. Some other time, then, I'd told myself. I would find another day, a quiet hour when no one was around to look at them. I had plenty of hours now, a whole lifetime in front of me. Perhaps I'd figure out what I wished to do with it. I crept down the main staircase, moonlight flooding the black and white tiles of the entrance hall. I reached the bottom, my bare feet silent on the cold tiles, and listened. Nothing. No one. I set my little map on the foyer table and drew a few X's and circles to signify the doors, the windows, the marble stairs of the front hall. I would become so familiar with the house that I could navigate it even if someone blinded me. A breeze announced his arrival, and I turned from the table toward the long hall, to the open glass doors to the garden. I'd forgotten how huge he was in this form. Forgotten the curled horns and lupine face, the bear-like body that moved with a feline fluidity. His green eyes glowed in the darkness, fixing on me, and as the doors snicked shut behind him, the clicking of claws on marble filled the hall. I stood still, not daring to flinch, to move a muscle. He limped slightly, and in the moonlight, dark shining stains were left in his wake. He continued toward me, stealing the air from the entire hall. He was so big that the space felt cramped, like a cage. The scrape of claw, a huff of uneven breathing, the dripping of blood. Between one step and the next, he changed forms,
and I squeezed my eyes shut at the blinding flash. When at last my eyes adjusted to the returning darkness, he was standing in front of me. Standing, but not quite there. No sign of the baldric or his knives. His clothes were in shreds, long, vicious slashes that made me wonder how he wasn't gutted and dead. But the muscled skin peering out beneath his shirt was smooth, unharmed.
Did you kill the bog?
My voice was hardly more than a whisper.
Yes.
A dull, empty answer, as if he couldn't be bothered to remember to be pleasant, as if I were at the very, very bottom of a long list of priorities.
You're hurt, I said, even more quietly.
Indeed, his hand was covered in blood, even more splattering on the floor beneath him. He looked at it blankly, as if it took some monumental effort to remember that he even had a hand and that it was injured. What effort of will and strength had it taken to kill the bog, to face that wretched menace? How deep had he had to dig inside himself, to whatever immortal power and animal that lived there, to kill it? He glanced down at the map on the table, and his voice was void of anything, any emotion, any anger or amusement, as he said,
"What is that?"
I snatched up the map. I thought I should learn my surroundings. Drip, drip, drip. I opened my mouth to point out his hand again, but he said,
"You can't write, can you?"
I didn't answer. I didn't know what to say. Ignorant, insignificant human.
No wonder you became so adept at other things.
I supposed he was so far gone in thinking about his encounter with the bog that he hadn't realized the compliment he'd given me, if it was a compliment. Another splatter of blood on the marble.
Where can we clean up your hand?
He lifted his head to look at me again, still and silent and weary. Then he said,
"There's a small infirmary."
I wanted to tell myself that it was probably the most useful thing I'd learned all night. But as I followed him there, avoiding the blood he trailed, I thought of what Lucian had told me about his isolation, that burden. Thought of what Tamlin had mentioned about how these estates should not have been his, and felt sorry for him. The infirmary was well stocked, but was more of a supply closet with a work table than an actual place to host sick fairies. I suppose that was all they needed when they could heal themselves with their immortal powers. But this wound wasn't healing. Tamlin slumped against the edge of the table, gripping his injured hand at the wrist as he watched me sort through the supplies in the cabinets and drawers. When I'd gathered what I needed, I tried not to balk at the thought of touching him, but I didn't let myself give in to my dread as I took his hand. The heat of his skin like an inferno against my cool fingers. I cleaned off his bloody, dirty hand, bracing for the first flash of those claws. But his claws remained retracted, and he kept silent as I bound and wrapped his hand. Surprisingly enough, there were no more than a few vicious cuts, none of them requiring stitching. I secured the bandage in place and stepped away, bringing the bowl of bloody water to the deep sink in the back of the room. His eyes were a brand upon me as I finished cleaning, and the room became too small, too hot. He'd killed the bog and walked away relatively unscathed. If Tamlin was that powerful, then the High Lords of Prithian must be near gods. Every mortal instinct in my body bleated in panic at the thought.
I was almost at the open door, stifling the urge to bolt back to my room when he said,
"You can't write, yet you learn to hunt, to survive. How?"
I paused with my foot on the threshold. "That's what happens when you're responsible for lives other than your own, isn't it? You do what you have to do." He was still sitting on the table, still straddling that inner line between the here and now and wherever he had to go in his mind to endure the fight with the bog. I met his feral and glowing stare.
"You aren't what I expected, for a human," he said.
I didn't reply, and he didn't say goodbye as I walked out. The next morning, as I made my way down the grand staircase, I tried not to think too much about the clean-washed marble tiles on the floor below. No sign of the blood Tamlin had lost. I tried not to think too much at all about our encounter, actually. When I found the front hall empty, I almost smiled, felt a ripple in that hollow emptiness that had been hounding me. Perhaps now, perhaps in this moment of quiet, I could at last look through the art on the walls, take time to observe it, learn it, admire it. Heart racing at the thought, I was about to head toward a hall I had noted was nearly covered in painting after painting when low male voices floated out from the dining room. I paused. The voices were tense enough that I made my steps silent as I slid into the shadows behind the open door. A cowardly, wretched thing to do, but what they were saying had me shoving aside any guilt.
"I just want to know what you think you're doing."
It was Lucian, that familiar lazy viciousness coating each word.
"What are you doing?" Tamlin snapped.
Through the space between the hinge and the door, I could glimpse the two of them standing almost face to face. On Tamlin's non-bandaged hand, his claws shone in the morning light.
"Me?"
Lucian put a hand on his chest.
"By the cauldron, Tam, there isn't much time, and you're just sulking and glowering. You're not even trying to fake it anymore."
My brows rose. Tamlin turned away, but whirled back a moment later, his teeth bared.
"It was a mistake from the start. I can't stomach it, not after what my father did to their kind, to their lands. I won't follow in his footsteps, won't be that sort of person, so back off."
"Back off? Back off while you seal our fates and ruin everything? I stayed with you out of hope, not to watch you stumble. For someone with a heart of stone, yours is certainly soft these days. The bog was on our lands. The bog, Tamlin! The barriers between courts have vanished, and even our woods are teeming with filth like the puka. Are you just going to start living out there? Slaughtering every bit of vermin that slinks in?"
"Watch your mouth," Tamlin said.
Lucian stepped toward him, exposing his teeth as well. A pulsing kind of air hit me in the stomach, and a metallic stench filled my nose. But I couldn't see any magic, only feel it. I couldn't tell if that made it worse.
"Don't push me, Lucian."
Tamlin's tone became dangerously quiet, and the hair on the back of my neck stood as he emitted a growl that was pure animal.
"You don't think I know what's happening on my own lands? What I've got to lose, what's lost already?"
The blight. Perhaps it was contained, but it seemed it was still wreaking havoc, still a threat, and perhaps one they didn't truly want me knowing about, either from lack of trust or because I was no one and nothing to them. I leaned forward, but as I did, my finger slipped and softly thudded against the door. A human might not have heard, but both high fae whirled. My heart stumbled. I stepped toward the threshold, clearing my throat as I came up with a dozen excuses to shield myself.
I looked at Lucian and forced myself to smile. His eyes widened, and I had to wonder if it was because of that smile or because I looked truly guilty.
Are you going out for a ride?
I said, feeling a bit sick as I gestured behind me with a thumb. I hadn't planned on riding with him today, but it sounded like a decent excuse. Lucian's russet eye was bright, though the smile he gave me didn't meet it. The face of Tamlin's emissary, more court-trained and calculating than I'd seen him yet.
I'm unavailable today, he said.
He jerked his chin to Tamlin.
He'll go with you.
Tamlin shot his friend a look of disdain that he took few pains to hide. His usual baldric was armed with more knives than I'd seen before, and their ornate metal handles glinted as he turned to me, his shoulders tight.
Wherever you want to go, just say so.
The claws of his free hand slipped back under his skin. No. I almost said it aloud as I turned pleading eyes to Lucian. Lucian merely patted my shoulder as he passed by.
Perhaps tomorrow, human.
Alone with Tamlin, I swallowed hard. He stood there waiting. I don't want to go for a hunt, I finally said quietly. True. I hate hunting. He cocked his head.
Then what do you want to do?
Tamlin led me down the halls. A soft breeze laced with the scent of roses slipped in through the open windows to caress my face.
You've been going for hunts, Tamlin said at last, but you really don't have any interest in hunting.
He cast me a sidelong glance.
No wonder you two never catch anything.
No trace of the hollow, cold warrior of the night before, or of the angry Fey noble of minutes before. Just Tamlin right now, it seemed. I'd be a fool to let my guard down around Tamlin, to think that his acting naturally meant anything, especially when something was so clearly amiss at his estate. He'd taken down the bog, and that made him the most dangerous creature I'd ever encountered. I didn't quite know what to make of him, and said somewhat stiltedly, How's your hand? He flexed his bandaged hand, studying the white bindings, stark and clean against his sun-kissed skin.
I didn't thank you.
You don't need to. But he shook his head, and his golden hair caught and held the morning light as if it were spun from the sun itself.
The bog's bite was crafted to slow the healing of High Fae long enough to kill us. You have my gratitude.
When I shrugged it off, he added,
How did you learn to bind wounds like this? I can still use the hand, even with the wrappings.
Trial and error. I had to be able to pull a bowstring the next day. He was quiet as we turned down another sun-drenched marble hallway, and I dared to look at him. I found him carefully studying me, his lips in a thin line.
Has anyone ever taken care of you?
He asked quietly. No. I'd long since stopped feeling sorry for myself about it.
Did you learn to hunt in a similar manner? Trial and error?
I spied on hunters when I could get away with it, and then practiced until I hit something. When I missed, we didn't eat. So learning how to aim was the first thing I figured out.
I'm curious, he said casually.
The amber in his green eyes was glowing. Perhaps not all traces of that beast warrior were gone.
Are you ever going to use that knife you stole from my table?
I stiffened.
How did you know?
Beneath the mask, I could have sworn his brows were raised.
I was trained to notice those things, but I could smell the fear on you more than anything.
I grumbled. I thought no one noticed. He gave me a crooked smile, more genuine than all the faked smiles and flattery he'd given me before.
Regardless of the treaty, if you want to stand a chance at escaping my kind, you'll need to think more creatively than stealing dinner knives. But with your affinity for eavesdropping, maybe you'll someday learn something valuable.
My ears flared with heat. I wasn't... Sorry, I mumbled. But I ran through what I'd overheard. There was no point in pretending I hadn't eavesdropped. Lucian said you didn't have much time. What did he mean? Are more creatures like the bog going to come here thanks to the blight? Tamlin went rigid, scanning the hall around us, taking in every sight and sound and scent. Then he shrugged, too stiff to be genuine.
I'm an immortal. I have nothing but time, Thera.
He said my name with such intimacy, as if he weren't a creature capable of killing monsters made from nightmares. I opened my mouth to demand more of an answer, but he cut me off.
The force plaguing our lands and powers, that too will pass someday if we're cauldron blessed. But yes, now that the bog entered these lands, I'd say it's fair to assume others might follow it, especially if the Puka was already so bold.
If the borders between the courts were gone, though, as I'd heard Lucian say, if everything in Prithian was different, as Tamlin had claimed, thanks to this blight, well, I didn't want to be caught up in some brutal war or revolution. I doubted I'd survive very long. Tamlin strode ahead and opened a set of double doors at the end of the hall. The powerful muscles of his back shifted beneath his clothes. I'd never forget what he was, what he was capable of, what he'd been trained to do, apparently.
As requested, he said, the study.
I saw what lay beyond him, and my stomach twisted. Chapter 13. Tamlin waved his hand, and 100 candles sprang to life. Whatever Lucian had said about magic being drained and off-kilter thanks to the blight clearly hadn't affected Tamlin as dramatically, or perhaps he'd been far more powerful to start with, if he could transform his sentries into wolves whenever he pleased. The tang of magic stung my senses, but I kept my chin high. That is, until I peered inside. My palms began sweating as I took in the enormous, opulent study. Tomes lined each wall like the soldiers of a silent army, and couches, desks, and rich rugs were scattered throughout the room. But it had been over a week since I left my family, though my father had said never to return, though my vow to my mother was fulfilled, I could at least let them know I was safe, relatively safe, and warn them about the sickness sweeping across Prithian that might someday soon cross the wall. There was only one method to convey it.
Do you need anything else?
Tamlin asked, and I jerked. He still stood behind me. No, I said, striding into the study. I couldn't think about the casual power he'd just shown, the graceful carelessness with which he'd brought so many flames to life. I had to focus on the task at hand. It wasn't entirely my fault that I was scarcely able to read. Before our downfall, my mother had sorely neglected our education, not bothering to hire a governess. And after poverty struck, and my elder sisters, who could read and write, deemed the village school beneath us, they didn't bother to teach me. I could read enough to function, enough to form my letters, but so poorly that even signing my name was mortifying. It was bad enough that Tamlin knew. I would think about how to get the letter to one of them once it was finished. Perhaps I could beg a favor of him or Lucian. Asking them to write it would be too humiliating. I could hear their words. Typical, ignorant human. And since Lucian seemed convinced that I would turn spy the moment I could, he would no doubt burn the letter, and any I tried to write after. So I'd have to learn myself.
"I'll leave you to it, then,"
Tamlin said as our silence became too prolonged, too tense. I didn't move until he'd closed the doors, shutting me inside. My heartbeat pulsed throughout my body as I approached a shelf. I had to take a break for dinner and to sleep, but I was back in the study before the dawn had fully risen. I'd found a small writing desk in a corner and gathered papers and ink. My finger traced a line of text, and I whispered the words. She grabbed her shoe, standing from her paw. I sat back in my chair and pressed the heels of my palms into my eyes. When I felt less near to ripping out my hair, I took the quill and underlined the word, position. With a shaking hand, I did my best to copy letter after letter onto the ever-growing list I kept beside the book. There were at least 40 words on it, their letters malformed and barely legible. I would look up their pronunciations later. I rose from the chair, needing to stretch my legs, my spine, or just to get away from that lengthy list of words I didn't know how to pronounce and the permanent heat that now warmed my face and neck. I suppose the study was more of a library, as I couldn't see any of the walls thanks to the small labyrinth of stacks flanking the main area and a mezzanine dangling above, covered wall to wall in books. But study sounded less intimidating. I meandered through some of the stacks, following a trickle of sunlight to a bank of windows on the far side. I found myself overlooking a rose garden, filled with dozens of hues of crimson and pink and white and yellow. I might have allowed myself a moment to take in the colors, gleaming with dew under the morning sun, had I not glimpsed the painting that stretched along the wall beside the windows. Not a painting, I thought, blinking as I stepped back to view its massive expanse. No, it was... I searched for the word in that half-forgotten part of my mind. Mural. That's what it was. At first, I could do nothing but stare at its size, the ambition of it, at the fact that this masterpiece was tucked back here for no one to ever see, as if it was nothing, absolutely nothing, to create something like this. It told a story with the way colors and shapes and light flowed, the way tone shifted across the mural, the story of Prithian. It began with a cauldron. A mighty black cauldron held by glowing slender female hands in a starry, endless night. Those hands tipped it over, golden sparkling liquid pouring out over the lip. No, not sparkling, but effervescent, with small symbols, perhaps of some ancient fairy language. Whatever was written there, whatever it was, the contents of the cauldron were dumped into the void below, pooling on the earth to form our world. The map spanned the entirety of our world, not just the land on which we stood, but also the seas and the larger continents beyond. Each territory was marked and colored, some with intricate ornate depictions of the beings who had once ruled over lands that now belonged to humans. All of it, I remembered with a shudder, all of the world had once been theirs, as far as they believed, crafted for them by the bearer of the cauldron. There was no mention of humans, no sign of us here. I supposed we'd been as low as pigs to them. It was hard to look at the next panel. It was so simple, yet so detailed, that for a moment, I stood there on that battlefield, feeling the texture of the bloodied mud beneath me, shoulder to shoulder with the thousands of other human soldiers lined up, facing the fairy hordes who charged at us. A moment of pause before the slaughter. The humans' arrows and swords seemed so pointless against the High Fae in their glimmering armor, or the fairies bristling with claws and fangs. I knew without another panel to explicitly show me, the humans hadn't survived that particular battle. The smear of black on the panel beside it, tinged with glimmers of red, said enough. Then another map of a much reduced fairy realm. Northern territories had been cut up and divided to make room for the High Fae, who had lost their lands to the south of the wall. Everything north of the wall went to them. Everything south was left as a blur of nothing. A decimated, forgotten world, as if the painter couldn't be bothered to render it. I scanned the various lands and territories now given to the High Fae. Still so much territory. Such monstrous power spread across the entire northern part of our world. I knew they were ruled by kings or queens or councils or empresses, but I'd never seen a representation of it, of how much they'd been forced to concede to the south, and how crammed their lands now were in comparison. Our massive island had fared well for Prithian by comparison, with only the bottom tip given over to us miserable humans. The bulk of the sacrifice was borne by the southernmost of the seven territories, a territory painted with crocuses and lambs and roses. Spring lands. I took a step closer until I could see the dark, ugly smear that acted as the wall. Another spiteful touch by the painter. No markers in the human realm, nothing to indicate any of the larger towns or centers, but I found the rough area where our village was and the woods that separated it from the wall. Those 2 days' journey seemed so small, too small compared to the power lurking above us. I traced a line, my finger hovering over the paint, up over the wall into these lands, the lands of the Spring Court. Again, no markers, but it was filled with touches of spring. Trees in bloom, fickle storms, young animals. At least I was to live out my days in one of the more moderate courts, weather-wise. A small consolation. I looked northward and stepped back again. The 6 other courts of Prithian occupied a patchwork of territories. Autumn, summer, and winter were easy enough to pick out. Then above them, 2 glowing courts. The southernmost one a softer, redder palette, the Dawn Court. Above, in bright gold and yellow and blue, the Day Court. And above that, perched in a frozen, mountainous spread of darkness and stars, the sprawling, massive territory of the Night Court. There were things in the shadows between those mountains, little eyes, gleaming teeth. A land of lethal beauty. The hair on my arms rose. I might have examined the other kingdoms across the seas that flanked our land, like the isolated fairy kingdom to the west that seemed to have gotten away with no territory loss and was still law unto itself, had I not looked to the heart of that beautiful living map. In the center of the land, as if it were the core around which everything else had spread, or perhaps the place where the cauldron's liquid had first touched, was a small, snowy mountain range. From it arose a mammoth solitary peak, bald of snow, bald of life, as if the elements refused to touch it,
There were no more clues about what it might be, nothing to indicate its importance. And I supposed that the viewers were already supposed to know. This was not a mural for human eyes. With that thought, I went back to my little table. At least I'd learned the layout of their lands, and I knew to never, ever go north. I eased into my seat and found my place in the book, my face warming as I glanced at the illustrations scattered throughout. A children's book, and yet I could scarcely make it through its 20 or so pages. Why did Tamlin have children's books in his library? Were they from his own childhood, or in anticipation of children to come? It didn't matter. I couldn't even read them. I hated the smell of these books, the decaying rot of the pages, the mocking whisper of the paper, the rough skin of the binding. I looked at the piece of paper, at all those words I didn't know. I bunched my list in my hand, crumpling the paper into a ball and chucked it into the rubbish bin.
I could help you to write to them, if that's why you're in here.
I jerked back in my seat, almost knocking over the chair, and whirled to find Tamlin behind me, a stack of books in his arms. I pushed back against the heat rising in my cheeks and ears, the panic at the information he might be guessing I'd been trying to send. Help? You mean a fairy is passing up the opportunity to mock an ignorant mortal? He set the books down on the table, his jaw tight. I couldn't read the titles glinting on the leather spines.
Why should I mock you for a shortcoming that isn't your fault? Let me help you. I owe you for the hand.
Shortcoming. It was a shortcoming. Yet it was one thing to bandage his hand, to talk to him as if he wasn't a predator built to kill and destroy, but to reveal how little I truly knew, to let him see that part of me that was still a child, unfinished and raw. His face was unreadable. Though there had been no pity in his voice, I straightened. I'm fine.
You think I've got nothing better to do with my time than come up with elaborate ways to humiliate you?
I thought of that smear of nothing that the painter had used to render the human lands and didn't have an answer. At least, not one that was polite. I'd given enough already to them. To him. Tamlin shook his head.
So you'll let Lucian take you on hunts and—
Lucian,
I interrupted quietly, but not softly.
Doesn't pretend to be anything but what he is.
What's that supposed to mean?
He growled, but his claws stayed retracted even as he clenched his hands into fists at his sides. I was definitely walking a dangerous line, but I didn't care. Even if he'd offered me sanctuary, I didn't have to fall at his feet. It means, I said with that same cold quiet, that I don't know you. I don't know who you are or what you really are or what you want.
It means you don't trust me.
How can I trust a fairy? Don't you delight in killing and tricking us? His snarl set the flames of the candles guttering.
You aren't what I had in mind for a human, believe me.
I could almost feel the wound deep in my chest as it ripped open and all those awful silent words came pouring out.
Illiterate.
Ignorant, unremarkable, proud, cold. All spoken from Nesta's mouth, all echoing in my head with her sneering voice. I pinched my lips together. He winced and lifted a hand slightly, as if about to reach for me.
Feyre, he began,
softly enough that I just shook my head and left the room. He didn't stop me. But that afternoon, when I went to retrieve my crumpled list from the wastebasket, it was gone.
and my pile of books had been disturbed, the titles out of order. It had probably been a servant, I assured myself, calming the tightness in my chest. Just Alice or some other bird-masked fairy cleaning up. I hadn't written anything incriminating. There was no way he knew I'd been trying to warn my family. I doubted he would punish me for it, but our conversation earlier had been bad enough. Still, my hands were unsteady as I took my seat at the little desk and found my place in the book I'd used that morning. I knew it was shameful to mark the books with ink, but if Tamlin could afford gold plates, he could replace a book or two. I stared at the book without seeing the jumble of letters. Maybe I was a fool for not accepting his help, for not swallowing my pride and having him write the letter in a few moments. Not even a letter of warning, but just to let them know I was safe. If he had better things to do with his time than come up with ways to embarrass me, then surely he had better things to do than help me write letters to my family. And yet, he'd offered. A nearby clock chimed the hour. Shortcoming. Another one of my shortcomings. I rubbed my brows with my thumb and forefinger. I'd been equally foolish for feeling a shred of pity for him, for the lone, brooding fairy, for someone I had so stupidly thought would really care if he met someone who perhaps felt the same, perhaps understood, in my ignorant, insignificant human way, what it was like to bear the weight of caring for others. I should have let his hand bleed that night, should have known better than to think that maybe there would be someone, human or fairy or whatever, who could understand what my life, what I had become these past few years. A minute passed, then another. Fairies might not be able to lie, but they could certainly withhold information. Tamlin, Lucian, and Alice had done their best not to answer my specific questions. Knowing more about the blight that threatened them, knowing anything about it, where it had come from, what else it could do, and especially what it could do to a human, was worth my time to learn. And if there was a chance that they might possess some knowledge about a forgotten loophole of that damned treaty, if they knew some way to pay the debt I owed and return me to my family so I might warn them about the blight myself, I had to risk it. 20 minutes later, I had tracked down Lucian in his bedroom. I'd marked on my little map where it was, in a separate wing on the second level, far from mine. And after searching his usual haunts, it was the last place to look. I knocked on the white-painted double doors.
Come in, human.
He could probably detect me by my breathing patterns alone, or maybe that eye of his could see through the door. I eased open the door. The room was similar to mine in shape, but was bedecked in hues of orange and red and gold, with faint traces of green and brown, like being in an autumn wood. But while my room was all softness and grace, his was marked with ruggedness. In lieu of a pretty breakfast table by the window, a worn work table dominated the space, covered in various weapons. It was there he sat, wearing only a white shirt and trousers, his red hair unbound and gleaming like liquid fire. Tamlin's court-trained emissary, but a warrior in his own right.
I haven't seen you around, I said, shutting the door and leaning against it.
I had to go sort out some hotheads on the northern border. Official emissary business, he said,
setting down the hunting knife he'd been cleaning, a long, vicious blade.
I got back in time to hear your little spat with Tam and decided I was safer up here. I'm glad to hear your human heart has warmed to me, though. At least I'm not on the top of your killing list.
I gave him a long look.
Well, he went on, shrugging, it seems that you managed to get under Tam's fur enough that he sought me out and nearly bit my head off. So I suppose I can thank you for ruining what should have been a peaceful lunch.
Thankfully for me, there's been a disturbance out in the Western Forest, and my poor friend had to go deal with it in that way only he can. I'm surprised you didn't run into him on the stairs.
Thank the forgotten gods for some small mercies.
What sort of disturbance? Lucian shrugged, but the movement was too tense to be careless.
The usual sort. Unwanted, nasty creatures raising hell.
Good. Good that Tamlin was away and wouldn't be here to catch me in what I planned to do. Another bit of luck.
I'm impressed you answered me that much, I said as casually as I could, thinking through my words. But it's too bad you're not like the Suriel, spouting any information I want if I'm clever enough to snare you. For a moment he blinked at me. Then his mouth twisted to the side, and that metal eye whizzed and narrowed on me.
I suppose you won't tell me what you want to know.
You have your secrets, and I have mine, I said carefully. I couldn't tell whether he would try to convince me otherwise if I told him the truth. But if you were a Suriel, I added with deliberate slowness, in case he hadn't caught my meaning. How exactly would I trap you? Lucian set down the knife and picked at his nails. For a moment, I wondered if he would tell me anything at all. Wondered if he would go right to Tamlin and tattle. But then he said,
I'd probably have a weakness for groves of young birch trees in the western woods, and freshly slaughtered chickens, and would probably be so greedy that I wouldn't notice the double loop snare rigged around the grove to pin my legs in place. I didn't dare ask why he had decided to be accommodating.
There was still a good chance he wouldn't mind seeing me dead, but I would risk it.
I somehow prefer you as High Fae. He smirked, but the amusement was short-lived.
If I were insane and stupid enough to go after a Suriel, I'd also take a bow and quiver, and maybe a knife, just like this one.
He sheathed the knife he'd cleaned and set it down at the edge of the table. An offering.
And I'd be prepared to run like hell when I freed it, to the nearest running water, which they hate crossing.
But you're not insane, so you'll be here, safe and sound?
I'll be conveniently hunting on the grounds, and with my superior hearing, I might be feeling generous enough to listen if someone screams from the western woods. But it's a good thing I had no role in telling you to go out today, since Tam would eviscerate anyone who told you how to trap a Suriel. And it's a good thing I had planned to hunt anyway, because if anyone caught me helping you, there would be trouble of a whole other hell awaiting us. I hope your secrets are worth it.
He said it with his usual grin, but there was an edge to it. A warning I didn't miss.
Another riddle. And another bit of information.
I said, it's a good thing that while you have superior hearing, I possess superior abilities to keep my mouth shut.
He snorted as I took the knife from the table and turned to procure the bow from my room.
I think I'm starting to like you, for a murdering human.
Chapter 14 Western Woods. Grove of young birch trees. Slaughtered chicken. Double loop snare. Close to running water. I repeated Lucian's instructions as I walked out of the manor, through the cultivated gardens, across the wild, rolling, grassy hills beyond them, over clear streams and into the spring woods beyond. No one had stopped me. No one had even been around to see me leave, bow and quiver across my back, Lucian's knife at my side. I lugged along a satchel stuffed with a freshly dead chicken, courtesy of the baffled kitchen staff, and had tucked an extra blade into my boot. The lands were as empty as the manor itself,
though I occasionally glimpsed something shining in the corner of my eye. Every time I turned to look, the shimmering transformed into the sunlight dancing on a nearby stream, or the wind fluttering the leaves of a lone sycamore atop a knoll. As I passed a large pond nestled at the foot of a towering hill, I could have sworn I saw four shining female heads poking up from the bright water, watching me. I hurried my steps. Only birds and the chittering and rustle of small animals sounded as I entered the still green western forest. I'd never ridden through these woods on my hunts with Lucian. There was no path here, nothing tame about it. Oaks, elms, and beeches intertwined in a thick weave, almost strangling the trickle of sunlight that crept in through the dense canopy. The moss-covered earth swallowed any sound I made. Old. This forest was ancient. And alive, in a way that I couldn't describe but could only feel, deep in the marrow of my bones. Perhaps I was the first human in 500 years to walk beneath those heavy, dark branches, to inhale the freshness of spring leaves masking the damp, thick rot. Birch trees. Running water. I made my way through the woods, breath tight in my throat. Night was the dangerous time, I reminded myself. I had only a few hours until sunset. Even if the bog had stalked us in the daylight. The bog was dead, and whatever horror Tamlin was now dealing with dwelled in another part of these lands, the Spring Court. I wondered in what ways Tamlin had to answer to its High Lord, or if it was his High Lord who had carved out Lucian's eye. Maybe it was the High Lord's consort, the she whom Lucian had mentioned, that instilled such fear in them. I pushed away the thought. I kept my steps light, my eyes and ears open, and my heartbeat steady. Shortcomings or no, I could still hunt, and the answers I needed were worth it. I found a glen of young, skinny birch trees, then stalked in ever-widening circles until I encountered the nearest stream. Not deep, but so wide that I'd have to take a running leap to cross it. Lucian had said to find running water, and this was close enough to make escape possible. If I needed to escape, hopefully I wouldn't. I traced and then retraced several different routes to the stream, and a few alternate routes, should my access to it somehow be blocked. And when I was sure of every root and rock and hollow in the surrounding area, I returned to the small clearing encircled by those white trees and laid my snare. From my spot up in a nearby tree, a sturdy, dense oak whose vibrant leaves hid me entirely from anyone below, I waited. And waited. The afternoon sun crept overhead, hot enough even through the canopy that I had to shrug off my cloak and roll up the sleeves of my tunic. My stomach grumbled, and I pulled a hunk of cheese out of my rucksack. Eating it would be quieter than the apple I'd also swiped from the kitchen on my way out. When I finished it off, I swigged water from the canteen I'd brought, parched from the heat. Did Tamlin or Lucian ever grow tired of day after day of eternal spring, or ever venture into the other territories, if only to experience a different season? I wouldn't have minded endless mild spring while looking after my family. Winter brought us dangerously close to death every year. But if I were immortal, I might want a little variation to pass the time. I'd probably want to do more than lurk about a manor house, too. Though I still hadn't worked up the nerve to make the request that had crept into the back of my mind when I saw the mural. I moved about as much as I dared on the branch, only to keep the blood flowing to my limbs. I'd just settled in again when a ripple of silence came toward me. As if the wood thrushes and squirrels and moths held their breath while something passed by. My bow was already strung. Quietly, I loosely knocked an arrow. Closer and closer, the silence crept. The trees seemed to lean in, their entwined branches locking tighter, a living cage keeping even the smallest of birds from soaring out of the canopy. Maybe this had been a very bad idea. Maybe Lucian had overestimated my abilities, or maybe he had been waiting for the chance to lead me to my doom. My muscles strained from holding still atop the branch, but I kept my balance and listened. Then I heard it. A whisper, as if cloth were dragging over root and stone. A hungry wheezing sniffing from the nearby clearing. I'd laid my snares carefully, making the chicken look as if it had wandered too far and snapped its own neck as it sought to free itself from a fallen branch. I'd taken care to keep my own scent off the bird as much as possible. But these fairies had such keen senses, and even though I'd covered my tracks, there was a snap, a whoosh, and a hollowed-out wicked scream that made my bones and muscles and breath lock up. Another enraged shriek pierced the forest, and my snares groaned as they held and held and held. I climbed out of the tree and went to meet the Suriel. Lucian, I decided as I crept up to the fairy in the birch glen, really, truly wanted me dead. I hadn't known what to expect as I entered the ring of white trees, tall and straight as pillars, but it was not the tall, thin, veiled figure in dark, tattered robes. Its hunched back facing me, I could count the hard knobs of its spine poking through the thin fabric. Spindly, scabby gray arms clawed at the snare with yellow, cracked fingernails. Run, some primal, intrinsically human part of me whispered. Begged. Run and never look back. But I kept my arrow loosely nocked. I said quietly, Are you one of the Suriel? The fairy went rigid and sniffed once, twice. Then slowly it turned to me, the dark veil draped over its bald head blowing in a phantom breeze. A face that looked like it had been crafted from dried, weather-worn bone, its skin either forgotten or discarded, a lipless mouth and two long teeth held by blackened gums, slitted holes for nostrils, and eyes, eyes that were nothing more than swirling pits of milky white. The white of death, the white of sickness, the white of clean-picked corpses. Peeking above the ragged neck of its dark robes was a body of veins and bones, as dried and solid and horrific as the texture of its face. It let go of the snare, and its two long fingers clicked against each other as it studied me. Human, it said, and its voice was at once one and many, old and young, beautiful and grotesque. My bowels turned watery. Did you set this clever, wicked trap for me? Are you one of the Suriel? I asked again, my words scarcely more than a ragged breath. Indeed, I am. Click, 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 went its fingers against each other, one for each word. Then the trap was for you, I managed. Run, run, run. It remained sitting, its bare, gnarled feet caught in my snares. I have not seen a human woman for an age. Come closer, so I might look upon my captor. I did no such thing. It let out a huffing, awful laugh. And which of my brethren betrayed my secrets to you? None of them. My mother told me stories of you. Lies. I can smell the lies on your breath. It sniffed again, its fingers clacking together. It cocked its head to the side, an erratic, sharp movement, the dark veil snapping with it.
What would a human woman want from the Suriel?
You tell me, I said softly. It let out another low laugh.
A test? A foolish and useless test. For if you dare to capture me, then you must want knowledge very badly.
I said nothing, and it smiled with that lipless mouth, its grayed teeth horrifically large.
Ask me your questions, human, and then free me.
I swallowed hard. Is there truly no way for me to go home?
Not unless you seek to be killed, and your family with you. You must remain here.
Whatever last shred of hope I'd been clinging to, whatever foolish optimism shriveled and died, this changed nothing. Before my fight with Tamlin that morning, I hadn't even entertained the idea anyway. Perhaps I'd only come here out of spite. So, fine. If I was here, facing sure death, then I might as well learn something.
What do you know about Tamlin?
More specific, human. Be more specific. For I know a good many things about the High Lord of the Spring Court.
The earth tilted beneath me. Tamlin is a High Lord?
Click, click, click. You did not know. Interesting.
Not just some petty fairy lord of a manor, but a High Lord of one of the seven territories. A High Lord of Prithian.
Did you also not know that this is the Spring Court, little human?
Yes. Yes, I knew about that. The Suriel settled on the ground.
Spring, summer, autumn, winter, dawn, day, and night, it mused,
as if I hadn't even answered.
The seven courts of Prithian, each ruled by a High Lord, all of them deadly in their own way. They are not merely powerful. They are power.
That was why Tamlin had been able to face the bog and live. High Lord. I tucked away my fear. Everyone at the Spring Court is stuck wearing a mask, and yet you aren't, I said cautiously. Are you not a member of the court?
I am a member of no court. I am older than the High Lords, older than Prithian, older than the bones of this world.
Lucian had definitely overestimated my abilities. And what can be done about this blight that has spread in Prithian, stealing and altering the magic? Where did it come from?
Stay with the High Lord, human, the Suriel said. That's all you can do. You will be safe. Do not interfere. Do not go looking for answers after today, or you will be devoured by the shadow over Prithian. He will shield you from it, so stay close to him, and all will be righted.
That wasn't exactly an answer. I repeated. Where did the blight come from?
Those milky eyes narrowed. The High Lord does not know that you came here today, does he? Does not know that his human woman came to trap a Suriel because he cannot give her the answers she seeks. But it is too late, human, for the High Lord, for you, perhaps for your realm as well.
Despite all that it had said, despite its order to stop asking questions and stay with Tamlin, it was his human woman that echoed in my head, that made me clench my teeth. But the Suriel went on.
Across the violent western sea, there is another fairy kingdom called Highburn, ruled by a wicked, powerful king. Yes, a king, he said when I raised a brow. Not a High Lord,
There his territory is not divided into courts. There he is law unto himself. Humans no longer exist in that realm, though his throne is made of their bones.
That large island I'd seen on the map, the one that hadn't yielded any lands to humans after the treaty, and a throne of bones.
The cheese I'd eaten turned leaden in my stomach.
For some time now, the King of Highburn has found himself unhappy with the treaty the other ruling High Fae of the world made with you humans long ago. He resents that he was forced to sign it, to let his mortal slaves go, and to remain confined to his damp green isle at the edge of the world. And so, 100 years ago, he dispatched his most trusted and loyal commanders, his deadliest warriors, remnants of the ancient armies that he once sailed to the continent to wage such a brutal war against you humans, all of them as hungry and vile as he. As spies and courtiers and lovers, they infiltrated the various High Fae courts and kingdoms and empires around the world for 50 years, and when they had gathered enough information, he made his plan. But nearly 5 decades ago, one of his commanders disobeyed him. The Deceiver. And
Visoriel straightened.
We are not alone.
I drew my bow farther, but kept it pointed at the ground as I scanned the trees. But everything had already gone silent in the presence of the Soriel.
Human, you must free me and run, it said,
those death-filled eyes widening.
Run for the High Lord's manor. Do not forget what I told you. Stay with the High Lord and live to see everything righted.
What is it? If I knew what came, I could stand a better chance of
the Naga. Fairies made of shadow and hate and rot. They heard my scream, and they smelled you. Free me, human. They will cage me if they catch me here. Free me, and return to the High Lord's side.
Shit. Shit. I lunged for the snare, making to put away my bow and grab my knife. But 4 shadowy figures slipped through the birch trees, so dark that they seemed made from a starless night. Chapter 15.
The Naga were sprung from a nightmare. Covered in dark scales and nothing more, they were a horrendous combination of serpentine features and male humanoid bodies, whose powerful arms ended in polished black, flesh-shredding talons. Here were the creatures of the blood-filled legends, the ones that slipped through the wall to torment and slaughter mortals, the ones I would have been glad to kill that day in the snowy woods. Their huge, almond-shaped eyes greedily took in the Soriel and me. The 4 of them paused across the clearing, the Soriel between us, and I trained my arrow toward the one in the center. The creature smiled, a row of razor-sharp teeth greeting me as a silvery forked tongue darted out.
The Dark Mother has sent us a gift today, brothers, he said,
gazing at the Soriel, who was clawing at the snare now. The Naga's amber eyes shifted toward me again.
And a meal.
Not much to eat, another one said, flexing its claws. I began backing away, toward the stream, toward the manor below, keeping my arrow pointed at them.
One scream from me would notify Lucian, but my breath was thin. And he might not come at all if he'd sent me here. I kept every sense fixed on my retreating steps.
Human, the Soriel begged.
I had 10 arrows. 9 once I fired the one knocked in my bow. None of them ash, but maybe they'd keep the Naga down long enough for me to flee.
I backed away another step. The 4 Naga crept closer, as if savoring the slowness of the hunt,
as if they already knew how I tasted. I had 3 heartbeats to make up my mind, 3 heartbeats to execute my plan. I drew my bowstring back farther, my arm trembling. And then I screamed, sharp and loud, and with every bit of air in my 2 tight lungs. With the Naga now focused entirely on me, I fired at the tether holding the Suriel in place. The snare shattered. Like a shadow on the wind, the Suriel was off, a blast of dark that set the 4 Naga staggering back. The one closest to me surged toward the Suriel, the strong column of its scaly neck stretching out. No chance of my movements being considered an unprovoked attack anymore, not now that they'd seen my aim. They still wanted to kill me. So I let my arrow fly. The tip glittered like a shooting star through the gloom of the forest. I had all of a blink before it struck home and blood sprayed. The Naga toppled back just as the remaining 3 whirled to me. I didn't know if it was a killing shot. I was already gone. I raced for the stream, using the path I'd calculated earlier, not daring to look back. Lucian had said he'd be nearby, but I was deep in the woods, too far from the manor and help. Branches and twigs snapped behind me, too close, and snarls that sounded like nothing I'd heard from Tamlin or Lucian or the wolf or any animal filled the still woods. My only hope of getting away alive lay in outrunning them long enough to reach Lucian, and then only if he was there as he'd promised to be. I didn't let myself think of all the hills I would have to climb once I cleared the forest itself, or what I would do if Lucian had changed his mind. The crashing through the brush became louder, closer, and I veered to the right, leaping over the stream. Running water might have stopped the Suriel, but a hiss and a thud close behind me told me it did nothing to hold the Naga at bay. I careened through a thicket, and thorns ripped at my cheeks. I barely felt their stinging kisses or the warm blood sliding down my face. I didn't even have time to wince, not as 2 dark figures flanked me, closing in to cut me off. My knees groaned as I pushed myself harder, focusing on the growing brightness of the wood's end. But the Naga to my right rushed at me so fast that I could only leap aside to avoid the slashing talons. I stumbled but stayed upright, just as the Naga on my left pounced. I hurled myself into a stop, swinging my bow up in a wide arc. I nearly lost my grip as it connected with that serpentine face, and bone crunched with a horrific screech. I hurtled over his enormous fallen body, not pausing to look for the others. I made it 3 feet before the 3rd Naga stepped in front of me. I swung my bow at his head. He dodged it. The other 2 hissed as they came up behind me, and I gripped the bow harder. Surrounded. I turned in a slow circle, bow ready to strike. One of them sniffed at me, those slitted nostrils flaring. "Scrawny human thing," he spat to the others, whose smiles grew sharper. "Do you know what you've cost us?" I wouldn't go down without a fight, without taking some of them with me. "Go to hell," I said, but it came out in a gasp. They laughed, stepping nearer. I swung the bow at the closest. He dodged it, chuckling. "We'll have our sport, though you might not find it as amusing." I gritted my teeth as I swung again. I would not be hunted down like a deer among wolves. I would find a way out of this. I would. A black clawed hand closed around the shaft of my bow, and a resounding snap echoed through the 2 silent woods. The air left my chest in a whoosh, and I only had time to half turn before one of them grabbed me by the throat and hurled me to the ground. He pounded my arm so hard against the earth that my bones groaned and my fingers splayed, dropping the remnants of my bow. "When we're done ripping off your skin, you'll wish you hadn't crossed into Prithian,"
he breathed into my face, the reek of carrion shoving down my throat. I gagged.
We'll cut you up so fine there won't be much for the crows to pick at.
A white-hot flame went through me. Rage or terror or wild instinct, I didn't know. I didn't think. I grabbed the knife in my boot and slammed it into his leathery neck. Blood rained down onto my face, into my mouth as I bellowed my fury, my terror. The Naga slumped back.
I scrambled up before the remaining two could pin me, but something rock hard hit my face. I tasted blood and soil and grass as I hit the earth. Stars danced in my vision, and I stumbled to my feet again out of instinct, grabbing for Lucian's hunting knife. Not like this. Not like this. Not like this. One of them lunged for me, and I dodged aside. His talons caught in my cloak and yanked, ripping it into ribbons just as his companion threw me to the ground, my arms tearing beneath those claws.
"You'll bleed,"
one of them panted, laughing under his breath at the knife I lifted.
"We'll bleed you nice and slow."
He wiggled his talons, perfect for deep, brutal cutting. He opened his mouth again, and a bone-shattering roar sounded through the clearing. Only it hadn't come from the creature's throat. The noise hadn't finished echoing before the Naga went flying off me, crashing into a tree so hard that the wood cracked. I made out the gleaming gold of his mask and hair and the long deadly claws before Tamlin tore into the creature. The Naga holding me shrieked and released his grip, leaping to his feet as Tamlin's claws shredded through his companion's neck. Flesh and blood ripped away. I kept low to the ground, knife at the ready, waiting. Tamlin let out another roar that made the marrow of my bones go cold and revealed those lengthened canines. The remaining creature darted for the woods. He got only a few steps away before Tamlin tackled him, pinning him to the earth, and disemboweled the Naga in one deep, long swipe. I remained where I lay, my face half buried in leaves and twigs and moss. I didn't try to raise myself. I was shaking so badly that I thought I would fall apart at the seams. It was all I could do to keep holding the knife. Tamlin got to his feet, wrenching his claws out of the creature's abdomen. Blood and gore dripped from them, staining the deep green moss. High Lord. High Lord, High Lord. Feral rage still smoldered in his gaze, and I flinched as he knelt beside me. He reached for me again, but I jerked back, away from the bloody claws that were still out. I raised myself into a sitting position before the shaking resumed. I knew I couldn't get to my feet.
Feyre, he said.
The wrath faded from his eyes, and the claws slipped back under his skin, but the roar still sounded in my ears.
There had been nothing in that sound but primal fury.
How? It was all I could manage to say, but he understood me.
I was tracking a pack of them. These four escaped and must have followed your scent through the woods. I heard you scream.
So he didn't know about the Suriel, and he'd come to help me. He reached a hand toward me, and I shuddered as he ran cool, wet fingers down my stinging, aching cheek. Blood. That was blood on them. And from the stickiness on my face, I knew there was already enough blood splattered on me that it wouldn't make a difference. The pain in my face and my arm faded, then vanished. His eyes darkened a bit at the bruise I knew was already blossoming on my cheekbone, but the throbbing quickly lessened. The metallic scent of magic wrapped around me, then floated away on a light breeze.
I found one dead half a mile away,
he went on, his hands leaving my face as he unbuckled his baldric. Then shucked off his tunic and handed it to me. The front of my own had been ripped and torn by the talons of the Naga.
I saw one of my arrows in his throat, so I followed their tracks here.
I pulled on Tamlin's tunic over my own, ignoring how easily I could see the cut of his muscles beneath his white shirt, and the way the blood soaking it made them stand out even more. A purebred predator, honed to kill without a second thought, without remorse. I shivered again and savored the warmth that leaked from the cloth. High Lord. I should have known, should have guessed. Maybe I hadn't wanted to. Maybe I'd been afraid.
Here, he said,
rising to his feet and offering me a bloodstained hand. I didn't dare look at the slaughtered Naga as I gripped his extended hand and he pulled me to my feet. My knees buckled, but I stayed upright. I stared at our linked hands, both coated in blood that wasn't our own. No, he hadn't been the only one to spill blood just now. And it wasn't just my blood that still coated my tongue. Perhaps that made me as much of a beast as him. But he'd saved me, killed for me. I spat onto the grass, wishing I hadn't lost my canteen.
Do I want to know what you were doing out here? He asked.
No, definitely not. Not after he'd warned me plenty of times already. I thought I wasn't confined to the house and garden. I didn't realize I'd come so far. He dropped my hand.
On the days that I'm called away to deal with trouble, stay close to the house.
I nodded a bit numbly. Thank you, I mumbled, fighting past the shaking racking my body, my mind. The Naga's blood on me became nearly unbearable. I spat again. Not just for this. For saving my life, I mean. I wanted to tell him how much that meant, that the High Lord of the Spring Court thought I was worth saving, but couldn't find the words. His fangs vanished.
It was the least I could do. They shouldn't have gotten this far onto my lands.
He shook his head, more at himself, his shoulders slumping.
Let's go home, he said, sparing me the effort of explaining why I'd been out here in the first place.
I couldn't bring myself to tell him that the manor wasn't my home, that I might not even have a home at all anymore. We walked back in silence, both of us blood-drenched and pale. I could still sense the carnage we'd left behind, the blood-soaked ground and trees, the pieces of the Naga. Well, I'd learned something from the surreal, at least, even if it wasn't entirely what I wanted to hear or know. Stay with the High Lord. Fine, easy enough. But as for the history lesson it had been in the middle of giving me, about wicked kings and their commanders and however they tied into the High Lord at my side and the Blight, I still didn't have enough specifics to be able to thoroughly warn my family. But the Surreal had told me not to go looking for further answers. I had a feeling I would surely be a fool to ignore his advice. My family would have to make do with the bare bones of my knowledge then. Hopefully it would be enough. I didn't ask Tamlin anything more about the Naga, about how many he'd killed before those four slipped away. Didn't ask him anything at all, because I didn't detect a trace of triumph in him, but rather a deep, unending sort of shame and defeat.
Chapter 16. After soaking in the bath for nearly an hour, I found myself sitting in a low-backed chair before my room's roaring fireplace, savoring the feel of Alice brushing out my damp hair. Though dinner was to be served soon, Alice had a cup of molten chocolate brought up and refused to do anything until I'd had a few sips. It was the best thing I'd ever tasted. I drank from the thick mug as she brushed my hair, nearly purring at the feel of her thin fingers along my scalp. But when the other maids had gone downstairs to help with the evening meal, I lowered my mug into my lap. If more fairies keep crossing the court borders and attacking, is there going to be a war? Maybe we should just take a stand. Maybe it's time to say enough, Lucien had said to Tamlin that first night. The brush stilled.
Don't ask such questions, you'll call down bad luck.
I twisted in my seat, glaring up into her masked face. Why aren't the other High Lords keeping their subjects in line? Why are these awful creatures allowed to roam wherever they want? Someone began telling me a story about a king in Highburn. Alice grabbed my shoulder and pivoted me around. It's none of your concern. Oh, I think it is.